And we'll be back in just a little bit here with Dan Carroll, co-founder of the Apollo Alliance, to talk about how to really achieve some of the rhetoric that the Bush Energy Plan references regarding growing the economy, protecting the environment, achieving greater energy independence, and creating jobs. We'll be back with him in a moment. You are listening to People Rise Up on KBOO here in Portland, Oregon. We're going to go a little past the half point of the hour today, and we're going to continue talking about energy policy, but vastly different from what the Bush Energy Plan is talking about, at least in kind of the practical substance as opposed to the lofty rhetoric angle. Joining me now is Dan Carroll. He is the co-founder of the Apollo Alliance, which I will have him explain in just one moment. Welcome to KBOO's Airwaves, Dan.
Hey, good to be here.
I just want to read a sentence or two here from the April 19th editorial from the New York Times called "The Missing Energy Strategy." The House is moving quickly and with sad predictability toward approval of yet another energy bill heavily weighted in favor of the oil, gas, and coal industries. In due course, the Senate may give the country something better, but unless Mr. Bush rapidly elevates the discussion, any bill that emerges from Congress is almost certain to fall short of the creative strategies needed to confront the two great energy-related issues of the age: the country's increasing dependency on imported oil and global warming, which is caused chiefly by the very fuels the bill so generously subsidizes. The Apollo Alliance is working to counter those subsidies, but at the same time revitalize the U.S. economy and provide greater energy independence. Dan, could you just briefly describe what the Alliance is?
Sure. You know, Apollo references John F. Kennedy's speech about going to the moon and the Apollo program, and the idea of it is, you know, a crash program to, you know, get the country oil and energy independent and to create good jobs and national security along the way. You know, this is very much calling to the can-do spirit of America. And, you know, we've been in a coalition of labor leaders, environmental leaders, business folks, and folks from urban and rural communities who see a lot of different opportunities, whether it's jobs, national security, reduction of environmental damage by tackling the opportunities in clean energy. And, you know, a lot about Apollo is not new. I always like to point out to people that Richard Nixon, of all people, called for an Apollo-type program after the first oil embargo in the 1970s and the high gas prices. So the idea of tackling this opportunity, investing in this opportunity, having government play a role with business and going after the export jobs and the national security benefits that are there is what Apollo's been all about. We're working with folks from the left and right of the political spectrum. And, you know, there's sort of a tipping point moment here that hopefully in the Apollo optimistic, hopeful spirit that we can succeed on, you know, this year or next.
Okay, now I've been working in issues related to renewable energy and the electricity industry on and off for over a decade now, both in radio and advocacy. And as you mentioned, very little of this stuff is new. And so I'm curious why you feel that now there's this opportunity for a tipping point to take place as opposed to past opportunities where maybe the same idea was put forward saying, you know, well, now's our opportunity,
yep,
and it didn't come to pass.
Yep. Well, Well, you know, as one gets older, one realizes sometimes that things take longer than one would like. I mean, we're talking in many ways about turning the aircraft carrier called the U.S. economy. And, you know, within all these different institutions, within auto companies, within oil companies, we're seeing more and more there's people within these institutions that get this and see the opportunity. And they're trying to build, you know, change transformative policies within their institutions. And these are, you know, countries onto themselves, the BPs and the ExxonMobils and the GMs and the Ford. We obviously stack up on top of that $50 a barrel of oil, stack up on top of that, you know, life in the post 9/11 period, oil at peak or close to it, the risks that a number of, you know, CIA analysts and national security types are saying, you know, is there Saudi Arabian civil war in a year? How are we going to defend the pipelines? All that sort of risk. And then the opportunities that are coming online between, you know, biofuels, wind, et cetera, the good work of people in the renewables industry over time, all of these things are coming together. Obviously, we have the sort of the dinosaur ostrich head in the sand approach of Bush Cheney. And, you know, there's the political risks that certain Republicans, you know, may or may not want to take. There's jockeying around 2008 politics. So there's just a number of things happening where, you know, we might get breakthrough soon. We might get breakthrough later. And it's a fascinating process. And it's just unbelievably critical. A lot of people believe, you know, James Woolsey, the former head of the CIA, Frank Gaffney of the Set America Free Coalition, which is, you know, very conservative folks that just, like, we need to do this for national security reasons. The Leo Gerard of the Steelworkers, president of Steelworkers, is one of our co-chairs, is seeing the loss of manufacturing jobs. My God, we need to be grabbing this. Windmills are made of steel. There's great jobs here. So there's you know, a weird moment that hopefully we're building to when people of all political stripes are going to come together and say we need to do this. And unfortunately, the biggest holdup right now is in the White House and their power over people in Congress.
Yeah, I've been really impressed to see the folks involved and the organizations involved, and it is sort of an odd mix.
It is an odd mix, and you know, frankly, it's difficult because some of our liberal partners and progressives are, you know, if you make a deal with folks like that, you know, or, you know, you're going to end up with nothing or not as much, et cetera. I mean, there's a political reality right now about what we can pass nationally. Our hope, particularly, you know, with the Apollo effort, is very much premised on bold national commitment. But where this is implemented, in fact, is local, state, and regional. You see amazing stuff going on with Western governors and regional governors in the Northwest, folks like Kenny Gwynn, Republican of Nevada. Arnold Schwarzenegger is trying to be green, Governor Pataki in New York. So a lot of the Republican governors get this. A lot of the Midwestern senators and Republicans in red states see the opportunity to literally grow our own gasoline. Mm-hmm. And we've seen them come around on the whole Cuba export issue around farm and ag exports. So when it comes to jobs for constituents, when it comes to state economies, we're going to see state treasurers, mayors, governors say, yo, Washington, help us do more. Help us innovate out here. And whether that comes in the form of money in terms of block grants or federal loan guarantees or tax tweaks or manufacturing credits for the auto industry, you know, we're trying to land on a right mix of both incentives and hard standards so we can make progress on carbon emissions. And it's, you know, it's a complicated brew right now.
Yeah, lead or get out of the way to the federal government is probably a regular message from the states.
That's something everyone seems to agree on.
Yeah. So let's go through some of what's a 10-point plan you folks have put out regarding job creation, energy independence, and protecting and restoring the natural environment. Front and center, not surprisingly, efficiency, conservation, use. You know, as Amory Lovins from the Rocky Mountain Institute is fond of referencing, you know, you don't want electricity. You want cold beer, you want hot showers. And if it takes 5 units of energy to make that happen instead of 15, it does, you know, you should want to just use less and get the same service. So explain how efficiency would be front and center in your folks' plan and
right.
where you'd have it.
Right. I think, you know, there's a lot of good plans on the table. We put a model plan of, you know, $300 billion over 10 years. Amory Lovins is, you know, somebody who I just can't admire and respect enough. There's good plans from he and other folks. You know, whether you're talking about foreign oil independence or actual energy independence, you know, two very different things that involve very different scales of investment to get to actual true energy independence. But, you know, the reality is any set of investments you look at around efficiency and renewables and these other matters, I mean, the numbers just look good if you do the life cycle costs of these investments. So end user efficiency, you know, there's 12 million homes that are eligible for federal weatherization assistance. We could create a new Works Progress Administration, put lots of young people and union workers and skilled workers to work on that alone, and every dollar we spend on that would create $2 in energy savings and about, I think, almost $3 in, you know, economic multiplier effect. So, you know, are we at a moment now where investment in these sorts of efforts make sense and are good for the economy? I think so. Whether it is the interstate highway system or the internet or saving Chrysler in the 1970s, which in fact is probably the auto company in the best shape right now domestically, there are times when government stimulating public-private partnerships is the way to go, and I think this area is one of them.
Okay, and so then, you know, once the efficiency is, you know, and there's efficiency you can make a profit on even, there's efficiency that you break even almost instantly within a year, and then there's the longer-term efficiency where you break even, you know, 2 to 5 years. There's virtually, like, I can't figure out or find energy efficiency measures where you're actually losing money in the long term. It just doesn't really happen.
It's kind of no brainer. It's quite amazing. And, you know, I think obviously there's, you know, around automobiles, CAFE standards, or some other measuring of, you know, fuel savings that could be built in. I mean, that's where a lot of the wrangling is about. We have auto companies, you know, frankly, if John Kerry had been in as president, you know, he still would have had the same challenge. You know, how do you deal with GM's healthcare costs, which are insane and expensive and large and get in the way of, you know, you want me to meet CAFE standards, I'm going to go bankrupt. That's just a reality, okay? So, you know, in terms of how we can build the incentives for flexible fuel, hybrid, vehicles that plug in at night when the grid is actually, you know, is not in big use, so it actually, you know, revenues for the utilities. There's a good plan that's on the table, again, from left and right for doing this and how that gets married to the right standards so we have measurable performance. You just can't throw money at an industry and then not have measurable performance on carbon. That's, you know, a huge chunk. I mean, that's like a third of the issue in terms of the carbon question. So, you know, that is a very challenging thing with different auto companies in different places, with key politicians in different places. And, you know, on the one hand, I'm optimistic that we'll get there. You know, the question is when, given just a tough political environment.
Right. And then there's the issue of how much time does the biosphere actually give you in terms of impacts related to climate change, et cetera. So efficiency in renewables, obviously front and center. Efficiency in multiple sectors, residential, commercial, industrial, transportation, smart planning regarding hydrogen, and not the Bush plan of using nuclear power to generate hydrogen, which is just crazy.
Well, I think the test for a lot of these things needs to be, you know, for every public dollar that we invest, you know, how many jobs, how much national security, how much environmental benefit are we going to get?
Well, one thing I wanted
we just need to do the math. And when we do the math, the clean energy solutions fall out as the best bet.
So you mentioned earlier $300 billion investment, I think, was it over a decade?
Over a decade.
Okay. So how many jobs are we talking based on that $300 billion?
See, we had a corporate economist look at it, and, you know, over 3 million jobs. And, you know, literally would pay for itself in increased economic activity and tax receipts, et cetera. You know, is there a will to invest at that level today in the U.S. Congress? No. But is that a model plan? And are there other ways to go in that direction at a smaller scale? Absolutely. So, our take is we're among a number of groups and coalitions that are basically saying, you know, let's climb that mountain as opposed to let's put our head in the sand.
Well, it seems like the Department of Homeland Security would be begging for ideas to give money to some of these projects.
Well, it really is. It's a hard, I've done a lot of politics over the years, and it's just important to remember that within the U.S. government and Homeland Security and Department of Energy, I mean, these are not monolithic places. You have a lot of people within these institutions that get this and are trying to move things. I mean, the Agriculture Department just moved, I think it was like $22 million to stimulate wind energy, and you know they're getting 500 farmers showing up at events in North Dakota, et cetera. So there are a lot of people within the federal government that understand this stuff and are pushing for this stuff. And it's just we're at a point where the economic interests of oil and the folks that Halliburton and other folks that fund Mr. Cheney and the Bush family over the years, they're even within those institutions, the oil company, a lot of them are kind of like, we need to make this move. And, unfortunately, Mr. Bush is getting bad advice right now. I just read something this morning, I can't remember where it was Gary Bauer, who's with the Family Research Council, mm-hmm. very, conservative group on a lot of social issues that would, make a lot of Democrats and progressive wince, and he's basically saying, boy, Bush blew it. Instead of going for Social Security as his legacy, it should be this stuff. Because, Gary Bauer and people like him on the conservative right see the national security risk as much as we do. And so we're in, a real realignment in this country about how we're going to have manufacturing, how we're going to have national security, and it just so happens that it happens to be clean energy for those people. Some of these folks don't wake up going, gee, I want to install solar arrays or, invest in biofuels, but, they see the realities. And so we can be weirded out by that or embrace these folks, and that's the challenge of working. And, we're seeing more and more in Oregon, right now. The state legislature has a very interesting bill to promote biofuel sponsored by, Jackie Dingfelder, who's a Democrat, and I'm spacing out on the Republican's name, but a perfect example of strange bedfellows going on right here, and I think that's good stuff.
Well, it seems like the so-called family values crowd would be into the idea of having, several million new stable economic, stable jobs to create stable home environments, because let's face it, stable job, stable home environment sort of go hand in hand, more so than not.
Absolutely, and we're seeing that, with the transformation of labor unions who have moved from not being fans of clean energy to seeing this as the key to future manufacturing. A lot of this we have been trying to win people over, evangelize, and market the Apollo idea. Almost in a Rorschach inkblot kind of fashion.
Because, give folks in our last minute here something that they can do to further this effort, even if it's nothing more than getting in touch with their senator and saying, forget this Bush plan. Look at Apollo.
Yeah, well, I think that if for folks to contact, and I would, if you're going to write a letter or contact people, I would say contact both Ron Wyden and Gordon Smith and actually put them on the letter together. Because, they do a lot of stuff together. They've been one of the pioneers in sort of moderate, middle-of-the-road, smart stuff. And on clean energy at the federal level, I think, appealing to them to be among the leaders in this area, that there's a lot of opportunity here, that there are good plans from the Apollo Alliance, from the Hewlett Commission, H-E-W-L-E-T-T, Hewlett Commission. If you go to Hewlett Commission on Energy on Google, you'll find it, and a group called SetAmericaFree, .org, ApolloAlliance.org, SetAmericaFree.org, and a Hewlett. Pick your plan, but this is the direction that, we hope you guys can show the way on and pioneer for Oregon.
Dan Carroll is co-founder of the Apollo Alliance. You can find out more about them online at www.apolloalliance.org, and the People Rise Up website at kboo.fm has links to them, the Nuclear Information Resource Service, and all sorts of other stuff related to energy planning. Thank you very much for joining us this morning, Dan.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Bye-bye.
If you'd like to send me comments about anything you heard today or any other show, you can send email to kboo@riseup.net. I will be back next week with another program for you.